Welcome to 3GT, a podcast where a pastor, parishioner, and professor have lively conversations on practical Christian living from a Reformed perspective. For more information, visit our website at 3GT.fm.
Welcome to another episode of 3GT. That does stand for Three Guys Theologizing. My name is Kyle Borg, and I'm joined today with my co-hosts, Aaron Sams and Barry York. Before we actually get started on this episode, Barry, congratulations on being a grandfather once again. So that's exciting news.
Well, thank you very much. Little Ezra, James Anthony is safe in the world, and he and mother are doing well. So we're very thankful.
The best of all worlds right there. Well, on today's episode, we are going to be revisiting a topic that we've touched on very briefly in the past, but probably expand a little more on it here today. We are very thankful for Aaron Sams, who has been a member of 3GT now for some time. And Aaron, you're very gifted in certain areas, and you are using those gifts and those talents in some very interesting, some very good ways. And we're just wondering if we could hear a little bit about what you do, and then we're going to broaden that discussion to see how we can incorporate or how we can think through some of that in relation to seminary training. So I'll hand it over to you. Just give our listeners an idea and a sense of what it is that you occupy your time with.
Well, I assume you mean professionally, because the rest of my life is pretty pretty boring. But
well, notice he did say you're gifted in certain areas.
Yeah, usually I sit at my desk and I drink coffee and I stare at the window and wish I was outside rather than inside. But I think what you're referring to is my professional life as an educator. And a lot of what I've done in education over the past 10 years is would fall into this category of educational technology. And specifically using video as a teaching tool instead of doing live lectures. This kind of picked up a terminology along the way. Early on, didn't really have a name for it. It picked up the name flipped classroom along the way. I've kind of ran with that term for a while. The term has since picked up some baggage of its own, some good and bad and otherwise. But the general premise behind this is instead of delivering a live lecture to a class, a teacher or a professor would pre-record their lesson using some sort of, you know, easy to create, usually video tool or video file that then they can upload and distribute to their students. Students would be responsible for viewing that prior to coming to class. And then class time, instead of dissemination of new information, would be a time for discussion and a time for kicking around of ideas, questioning and answering, far more dialogical than simply a monologue by a professor. So that's kind of the general idea, removing the lecture from the classroom time so that class can be used for more challenging cognitive tasks, or higher order thinking, as it's often called.
So, well, can we just back up a little bit? How did you get interested in this? What started this passion of yours?
Yeah, kind of by accident. In 2006, 2007 school year, I stumbled across some software that allowed me to record like a slide deck, PowerPoint slideshow, as well as my audio. And one thing that I was facing as an educator is I had a lot of students who were gone a lot. And as a high school teacher, they're gone for legitimate reasons. They're, you know, off at a basketball game or at a speech and debate tournament or at a band competition or something like that. So, you know, legitimate school activities, but when students miss class, they tend to get behind. So I found some software and I figured, oh, you know what I'll do? When I teach my lessons, I'll just record what I'm already teaching. So recording the PowerPoint slideshow and my audio, and I started putting those online for my students who were gone. My students really appreciated that. That way they could hear the lesson ahead of, or when they got back, or you know, prior to returning to class, and they would be caught up with the class instead of being a day behind. And they liked being able to do that rather than trying to, you know, come in and get additional help after school. And it saved me time as well, where I didn't have to provide remediation for individual students every single time somebody missed class. I could answer their specific questions after they'd viewed the lesson. So in doing so and putting these things online, I started to get emails and comments online from students who've stumbled upon them. and said, hey, thanks for putting this out there. My teacher, didn't do a good job of teaching this, or this helped me review for an exam I had coming up. And I realized I'd kind of stumbled upon something really powerful, and that is just utilizing easy to create video technology, easy to distribute video technology. Again, this is pre-YouTube. Google had not even acquired YouTube at this point.
Somewhat like Khan Academy, Aaron?
Kind of bubbled up right around the same time. So at the time that we were, and I say we, this is my next door teaching colleague and I, as about the time we were kind of developing a professional network around this concept, on the Khan Academy did start to bubble up. Had a few communications with him, since met him a few times.
Could have been Sam's Academy.
It could have been, yeah. Had I had the wherewithal at that point and the desire to start something other than being a teacher. But I focus primarily on building a network of professional educators who are interested in this, and rather than trying to build a product is kind of the route that I took. So right around the same time, though, that these things were happening, Google then acquired YouTube. Things kind of exploded. Now you'd be hard pressed to find too many teachers who don't utilize online video in some capacity. Now, we were by no means the first to use video as a teaching tool. I mean, when I was a kid, the teacher would roll in the cart with the big old honking television strapped to the top and a VCR, and they're just cheering, commences. And even before that, we had, film strips. And if you were picked to be the kid who got to push the button to advance the film strip, you knew your day had come.
That's right.
So it was reel to reel in my day.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know what that is. Really. <Just kidding>. It's obviously nothing new in terms of using video as a teaching tool, but what we were using is as teacher created video, which was kind of a new concept. And not just teacher created video, but easy to create. Any teacher could do it and push it out to their students, type of thing. And the time was right for it in terms of technology. The time was right for it in terms of the needs my students had. So I was really just trying to meet a need. My students were missing class and I needed to get them caught up. Stumbled upon a really powerful teaching tool, and it kind of exploded from there.
So you said that this is called the flipped classroom. So just so that I'm tracking, all our listeners are tracking, essentially, in a very general terms, the flipped classroom is really a pedagogical model that is really taking what used to be homework and doing that in the classroom, and taking what used to be classroom work and having students watch that at home.
Yeah, definitely. That's probably the flip classroom definition in its simplest form. Yeah.
Okay. What would just be
to be real clear, it's watching the video lecture at home and then coming to the class and doing the homework.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that in class. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
So what are because I'm curious about this. What are some of the advantages to this? What did you find as a teacher and educator? What have other people have said? And also, if I can, at the same time, what are some of the disadvantages? Yeah. This is a very new way of doing, at least for the 21st century, a very new way of doing education. So
yeah, there's definitely some of both. The advantages, hands down, the number one advantage is time. You get time back. So instead of spending all of class time delivering new content, you actually have time to engage students and answer their questions and get them the help that they need. The other side of that is, instead of sending students home to do work that they may or may not be able to do, this more applies to middle school or high school student. A lot of times my students would go home and they simply could not do their homework. It's not that they didn't want to. They did not know how to do it, and they didn't have the resources available to do that. I grew up in a family of educators and educated people, and they would find those resources for me. But a lot of my students don't have those resources at home, and they were unable to complete their work. So this kind of, A, gave teachers time back in the classroom and leveled the playing field when students were outside of the class. Then what it allows the teachers to do is to meet the student needs during the class time and then get them to these higher order thinking. Rather than just remembering and understanding information, they're now analyzing and applying things and evaluating things and even creating new materials and new concepts of their own. So that's where we want to get our brains working, is in those higher order rather than just low order content, understanding and remembering of things. So time for sure. For example, I taught science. I was able to do 50% more labs the first year I did this because I had more time to do them. And that's one thing that teachers always need more of, is time. Now, one of the downsides is you lose the spontaneous question. So if I'm giving a lecture in class or And a student has a question, they just pop up their hand and I can answer their question that they have right then and there. And that goes away in this model, and you have to be okay with that. Now, you can make up for that in other ways. You can train students to write those questions down, bring them to class, and I would always spend the first 5 or 10 minutes of class answering their questions that they had, or have some sort of online format to have those questions submitted and answered for them. You can't ignore those questions. You want to encourage those questions, but you do lose out on that spontaneous question. The other downside is it fits better for some subject areas than it does for other subject areas. For example, material that is concrete and linear, things like mathematics and mathematically based science classes, it really works well because there's stuff to be learned. Things are a little more abstract that need a lot more conversation and discussion, like, you know, things in humanities, literature, philosophy, it's not going to be as applicable. I'm not going to say it's not applicable at all, because there's always kind of those basic, you know, grammar level bits of information that you need to get students, and they may or may not already have. It's a good way to distribute that to students and then use the time for more discussion. But you certainly don't want to replace conversation and discussions with recorded lectures. If you're not already doing a lot of recorded lecture, it's probably not a good model for you. Those who are kind of feeling tied to content and maybe restricted by content delivery, it is a good model to get the time back to get students engaging in higher order thinking.
And do you find in your experience and feedback that you've gotten, is this connecting with students in a way that is helpful to them?
Yeah, a lot of students, yes. Some students, no. Frankly, the students that don't like it the most are the students who are really good at playing the game of school. Because now, instead of just spoon-feeding them the stuff that they need, they're expected to do some of that on their own, and they're expected to think and engage in more challenging work in class that they may not be actually used to. And so a lot of them are kind of stuck and frustrated with that. Other students simply just don't learn through direct instruction very well. And this is a form of direct instruction. It's just done outside of the class. Some students, tend to learn better through learning by doing, or through a hands-on situation, or through exploring something on their own. And students there are going to be frustrated as well. And additionally, some teachers have different, philosophical bents on how class should look. So in science education, we do a lot of what's called inquiry learning. And students are learning through questioning, they're learning through investigation. This does not fit really well with that type of model, assuming that that you want students to learn particular content through inquiry, because inquiry is based on the idea of starting with questions, starting with investigation. Now, you could use the flipped classroom to supplement after they've gone through their own investigation to ensure that they learn the correct material. So a colleague of mine has a system he calls Explore, Flip, Apply. So instead of starting with content and then having the students apply it, he starts with inquiry, investigation, and then supplements their understanding with some sort of directed instruction through a video. So he's kind of adapted the flip model to work with inquiry. There's other people, though, that are kind of pure inquiry folk who would never, ever give a live lecture to begin with and would therefore never want to give any sort of recorded lecture. And so the model simply wouldn't apply to them. So I think it can be applied in most subject areas, but depending on the personality of the teacher, the philosophical bent that teacher might have, it's going to be more or less applicable.
Well, I was always good at playing school, so I guess this wouldn't be fit for me very well.
It's entirely possible. Yeah. one interesting group of students who also didn't do well with this are kind of my low achievers who just would skate by with like a D- and barely pass, or the students who would kind of get, they would still fail, but they'd fail with like a 45%. They would now fail with like a 9%. Because, if a kid's sitting in a class, even if they're disengaged, they're going to pick up something just by being around the content that's being delivered. But when you say you have to go to my class website, click on a video, sit down and watch it, and then when you come to class, you're expected to do work on your own or with a small group, they're going to have to take some initiative to do that. So the kids who are just going to sit around and listen, maybe if you shove a worksheet in front of them, they'll probably copy their friends. If you shove a test in front of them, they'll probably, you know, answer C for all the multiple choice and get a few points. If they join the right lab group, it's conceivable that they might actually be able to eke out a passing grade without having actually learned something. This, I think, it kind of equalizes things a little bit in terms of the student grade actually reflects what they can and can't do a little bit better, at least the way I made it work in my class. Yep. So, and the students who were just skating by are not going to skate by anymore. They're going to fail, and they're going to fail abysmally, which was a bitter pill to swallow and a hard conversation I had to have with my administration.
Man. So two quick questions, maybe quick, before we get into maybe the seminary aspect of this. My first question is, so when students show up in the classroom to discuss or to do more of the hands-on, is that also being replaced by a lot of the peer-to-peer instruction, or is the teacher just seen as a facilitator in that instance, or
That's a bit of a wild card. It kind of depends on the teacher. There actually is a concept out there called peer instruction. It was developed by Dr. Eric Mazur. He's a physics teacher at Harvard. A colleague of mine, Dr. Julie Schell, did some postgrad work with him and kind of developed the idea and actually adapted it to work with a flipped model. So peer instruction is that students are given something to do outside of class, video, maybe a reading, maybe something else. There are some questions that they answer before coming to class. And then based on the student responses, you have students essentially defend their answer to each other. And after teaching each other and going through that, generally speaking, Dr. Mazur would get about a 95% success rate in terms of student understanding of the material without ever having, you know, done any sort of lecture. And then they're ready to apply it and do more in class. So that's this model called peer instruction. A flipped version of that is just simply using video outside of the class, getting some data ahead of time and using that data to inform what you're going to do in class and to using that data for students to help teach each other. Other times, teachers are acting as more of a facilitator, and more traditional teachers are simply just, helping students work on their worksheets and master the content and the material. So it's a really flexible tool. It fits in different places with a lot of different forms of philosophies of education. I would be even hesitant to call it a pedagogical model. I would more call it a teaching technique. To be utilized within various pedagogical models.
That's interesting. I asked because I recently served on an accreditation committee for ATS, the Association of Theological Schools. And one evening, I was a practitioner. Long story, I won't go into all of it. But basically, I was serving on this committee with a lot of very high-end people, education professionals. And we had a very interesting discussion about how most models today are moving away. I think it was called a teacher-centric classroom, where the teacher really takes a back seat and it's peer-on-peer learning. And not to step on anybody's toes, that always annoyed me. That always annoyed me in college, and it always annoyed me in seminary. I thought, I'm paying, as much as I like my fellow classmates, I'm paying money to hear the expert. I by and large, usually didn't totally care about what most of my fellow classmates had to say, nor did I think they should care what I had to say. So, so that's interesting it's very dynamic. It's very flexible. It fits in with different models or what have you. My second question real quick is this something that would work in homeschooling? So my wife and I, we homeschool our children, as probably do several of our listeners. Is this something that could be utilized in a homeschool environment?
And the interesting thing is,
Are you meaning having mom record her lecture to the students and then having them watch it later?
I suppose that might be one way to do it.
That's actually a really good point. There's a kind of an internal conversation that those of us who utilize this technique are having, and it's the question of curate versus create. Should a teacher create their own video content, or should a teacher go out and use stuff that's already out there online? And frankly, I think a teacher should make their own stuff, because there's that teacher has a voice and a style and uses a vocabulary that the students are familiar with and the students are going to recognize. And it shows the students that the teacher's kind of made an investment in their education and has made an investment in what they're going to learn. That being said, it's not always practical for a teacher to do that. So a lot of teachers kind of use a combination thereof. I use a combination when I teach. When I taught chemistry, I made all my own stuff. But now that I'm working in higher ed, there's some things that I'm expected to teach that I'm simply not an expert in. And so I will often utilize the expertise of others. I would definitely be hesitant to use an entire curriculum that's been developed by another teacher, but piecemealing some stuff together. Good teachers do that anyhow. They piecemeal this resource from here, this reading from here, this video from here, this, you know, activity from somebody else or whatever. So I have always taken the hodgepodge approach to education, and I think that's the way to go. But in terms of homeschool, utilizing video as an instructional tool, I say go for it. Whether or not you want to call it flipped classroom or not, I think that's neither here nor there. That's one of the challenges, especially in education land. Once you give something a name, it really gets pigeonholed. And then people are like, well, is this flipped or not? I'm like, I don't care. Does it help meet the needs of your students? You know, that's the important question. So, using video as a teaching tool, I think is applicable in homeschools, in online schools, in face-to-face environments. Flipped is now kind of being categorized as a sub-segment of what's called a blended learning environment. So blended just meaning utilizing digital and online tools as well as face-to-face. So there's different permutations and different formats of that. Flipped is often, at least according to the Clayton Christensen Institute, which is a think tank and education think tank out of Harvard, they put flipped as a subcategory of blended.
Out here, Aaron, where you and I live, of course, the public schools have what they call PA, or for Pennsylvania, cyber school, and many parents are utilizing that. Even homeschool parents are signing up for classes and using some of the things that the public school is teaching and then incorporating that into their homeschool curriculum.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and like you both are saying, you know, does it apply here? Or it's sort of like that. You know, 10 years ago when I started using video as a teaching tool, it was really novel and was unprecedented. But now there are so many different ways we can utilize these digital tools. I actually see the concept of flipped classroom per se on the downturn. I think it's kind of on its way out because it's been so absorbed into the fabric of education, it's almost going to be a non-thing. It'll be about as novel as picking up a pencil to write with. You'll just pick up a camera, make a quick little video and post it online. Of course I would do that as a teacher. Why would I not? It's so easy to do and it's the most efficient way to deliver it. We're not even going to think about it as a concept in and of itself. And that's been my desire with all of the work I've been doing in this in the last few years, is to make essentially work myself out of a job and to just have it be a thing that we don't even think about, and we don't even talk about anymore. So I think it's heading in that direction. I'm very, very happy that that's the case.
Well, Aaron, you and I have gotten to know one another because of the help that you've given to us at the seminary. And so I know you've put a lot of thought into this approach regarding higher education. So could you make a few comments regarding that?
I utilize the technique in higher ed with my education students to a somewhat limited extent. I don't use it as much as I did when I taught high school chemistry, but I still use it. I actually, at one of the conferences that I hosted a few years ago, I met a professor from an ATS school who was very interested in bringing the concept into a theological education as well. For me, I think anytime you can take a tool or a technique and you can make your classroom more efficient and more effective, and you can make a better use of the class time, I think you're making strides in the right direction. Now, better use of the class time really looks different in a chemistry class than it does in a pastoral theology class. So, so what that looks like, I'm certainly not going to try to prescribe for a teacher or a professor. That's something they're going to have to figure out. That's something they're going to have to, you know, develop within their own collegial context, within their own field, within their own experience. Because it simply does look different. The main benefit I'm seeing in higher ed is that, I think a lot of professors, me included, we are almost afraid that if we don't do what Kyle said he wants to hear the expert, he wants to hear the lectures from these people whose ideas are great. If we're not up in front doing that, we feel like we're not doing our job, or we feel like we could more easily be replaced. But the further I get into education, and I've been in education for about 17 years now, the less a teacher's in the front of the classroom, the more valuable I think they are, and the harder their job actually becomes. Because to actually develop and to facilitate some way to get students to learn stuff without them necessarily just hearing content from you, but providing them with readings, providing them with questions to wrestle through and to have to develop answers for, that is more challenging cognitive work. And research is showing that that is more long lasting than simply content acquisition. That when you put the pieces together yourself, you're more likely to remember it. It's more likely to stick with you and more likely to be able to be absorbed into the things that you already understand, your prior knowledge about things, than if you just hear new information. So you can hear new information and you can read, you know, readings from your professor, but a really gifted educator or a really, you know, well-trained educator is going to be able to weave those things together masterfully where it looks like the teacher's not actually doing anything, but they did a lot of work ahead of time and they're working as a facilitator to continue to make sure the conversations are going, they're catching misconceptions before they take root, they're steering conversations in ways that are leading to a desired end. So although it might look unstructured and though it might look like the teacher is not quote unquote teaching, it's a more challenging, more difficult task and it requires even a higher level of content mastery to be able to do that. But for a casual observer to walk in or even to some students, and some of my own students, they would say, Mr. Sams, you don't teach anymore. Or Mr. Sams, you just like this model because we have to do all the work. And I shout a resounding yes, absolutely. You're right. Because the harder you're working in a classroom, the more active your brain is and the more likely you are to learn. Whoever's brain's working the hardest is learning the most. So when the teacher is the hardest working person in the room, they're the person who's getting the most out of that classroom time. So the student brains have to be most active in order to be doing the most learning. And it's a skill that has to be mastered in order to be able to do that as an educator.
Aaron, I think that shows the rule of thumb that they give an education that 10% of what we hear we retain, but if we discuss it, it's usually 60%. And then if we use it, it goes up to 90%. So it shows that the lecture model is not always just the best model.
Definitely. And I'm actually not anti-lecture. I think there are times when a live lecture is the best tool to deliver a particular topic. I don't think it should be our default mode, and I think it should be used appropriately but sparingly. I mean, I give live lectures all the time. I go to conferences, I stand up and I talk for an hour. And I talk for an hour about not giving lectures. And I tell people that here's why I'm not a hypocrite in here. It's okay to give a live lecture occasionally because a good lecture is a delight to listen to.
Just like a podcast.
Exactly. A good one. A good one. Not this one. A good one.
That's right. That's right.
There's one called the Jerusalem Chamber that you might want to check out. No, I'm just kidding.
Check them out at thejerusalemchamber.com.
A good lecture is a delight to listen to, much like, you know, a good sermon is a delight to listen to. And I'm not anti-sermon. I don't think we should do this to replace church. You know, I think we should do this to as another form of content delivery, just like reading a book could deliver content, just like, you know, listening to a lecture is a way to deliver content, just like having a conversation with someone is a way to learn. We're just mixing it up a little bit and finding the most appropriate tool and the most efficient tool to teach, trying to keep make lecture not our default mode.
So you're not saying we should flip the pulpit?
I would not recommend that we do that, although I have had conversations with people who like the idea and have asked me my thoughts about it, and I've basically said, I don't recommend it. If you want to flip Sunday school, then maybe there's something we could talk about.
You know, I don't, we're coming near to the end of this episode, but I would love to do a follow-up on how this would apply to the pulpit. You know, as a pastor, sometimes the feedback you get is, you know, I'm just a visual learner. I'm a hands-on person, so sermons don't connect with me. And no matter how much you try to get across, you know, we believe this is biblical, we do live in an era where certain educational institutions have begun to take into an account different learning styles. And I would be fascinated, again, maybe this is for another time, but since Aaron opened the door, I would be fascinated in hearing some of Aaron's thoughts on, and even Barry, who's very experienced in the pulpit. I would be fascinated to hear a discussion on that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we should do it. I think that there's so many things going on with respect to the dynamics of preaching, that this would be a very important topic for us to consider, because I do think that that's a danger in our culture, that we're utilizing all of these technologies, but sometimes not thinking through the theological implications of them. So I think it would be good to have a follow-up. Matter of fact, why don't we just plan on doing that?
And, you know, in case our listeners were not convinced by hearing Aaron's expertise flowing out of him so wonderfully, Aaron literally has written the textbook on this. So Aaron wrote Flip Your Classroom, Reach Every Student in Every Class Every Day, together with a man named Jonathan Bergman. You can pick up your copy at Amazon, and I'd suggest carrying it with you. So if you see Aaron on the street, he can sign it for you.
Yeah, it, the value decreases by half as soon as I sign it. So just keep that in mind when you do that.
Oh. Well, that concludes an episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Aaron, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Certainly.
Wonderful things there to reflect upon and think about. This is Kyle Borg, and I'm signing out.